ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So this morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 7. Lord Krishna instructs Uddhava. Today it's text number 28. So what we'll do, I guess we'll just chant the verse and read the purport. Then we'll try to give an overview of the context in which this verse appears. And then we'll talk a little bit about the subject matter of the verse itself. So the word-for-word meanings, Twam, you, to, however, Kalpa, capable, Kavi, learned, Daksha, expert, Subhaga, handsome, Amrita, Basana, having nectarian speech, na are not, karta, a doer, na ihase, you do not desire, kinchit, anything, jada, stupefied, unmata, maddened, pisacha, vat, like a ghostly creature. Tvam tu kalpa kavir daksha, Subhago mitapasana nakarta nehase kinchi jadon mata pichacha bat tvam tu kalpa kavir daksha subhago mita pasana nakarta nehase kinchi jadan mata picha sadvat chanters. Anybody else? Yes. Well, we'll be talking a little bit. Well, we'll be talking about 24 gurus today. I think that will come later, later classes. But let's read the translation and purport, then we'll get an overview of what we're going to do here today. So I'll read the translation. Maybe you can pick up the purport from over that side. You, however, although capable, learned, expert, handsome, and most eloquent, are not engaged in doing anything, nor do you desire anything. Rather, you appear stupefied and maddened as if you were a ghostly creature.
Ignorant persons often think that renounced spiritual life is meant for those who are impotent or homely or incompetent and practice worldly affairs. Sometimes foolish people say that religious life is a crutch for those who are not expert enough to achieve a high status in society. Therefore, King Yadu has described the qualities of the mendicant Brahmana in order to show that the Brahmana has taken to renounce spiritual life in spite of great potential for worldly success. The Avadhut Brahmana is described as being expert, learned, good-looking, eloquent, and in every sense qualified to be a great material success. Still, the Avadhut has renounced material life and taken to Krishna consciousness. Going back home, back to Godhead, for an eternal life of bliss and knowledge is the real work of human being.
The followers of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu simultaneously cultivate their own Krishna consciousness and strenuously endeavor in missionary work to help others become Krishna conscious. Often foolish persons deride the devotees by saying, "Why don't you get a job?" They think that one who is sincerely endeavoring for spiritual enlightenment and who is also enlightening others is not doing anything practical. Foolish materialists will pay millions of dollars to extend their lives by a few weeks or months in a hospital, but they do not appreciate someone endeavoring for eternal life. There is no actual logic in material life.
Thank you. So, this verse, in this verse we find Maharaj Yadu speaking to an Avadhuta Brahmana. So how do we get here to this point? I'm not sure the last verse you read, but this is the beginning of a conversation between the king and the Brahmana. And we get here based on some steps that were taken previously by Lord Krishna and Uddhava. So let's back up a little bit and get some overview of this. 6th and 7th chapters of the 11th canto. What happens in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam? Krishna's pastimes are described in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Now we're in the 11th canto, and Krishna has concluded his pastimes and is now ready to leave the world. His mission has been accomplished, and that mission was, what was his mission? We're coming? Pratitanada sadhanam vinasayata duskaram dharma samstapanartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. He came to rid the world of the overburden that demonic kings were there. And he also came to display his transcendental pastimes to attract all living entities back to him. And so that took place in the 10th canto. Having concluded those activities, Krishna, in the 11th canto, has decided to go back to his eternal abode in the spiritual world. So he's concluding his pastimes, and he's advising the members of the Yadu dynasty, the family in which he appeared, that they should also wrap up their affairs here and return to their to the spiritual world. Or various posts that they have as demigods in the universal management. Now, when this came to the awareness of Uddhava, and Uddhava was who? Who was Uddhava? Anybody say? Huh? He's Krishna's cousin, yes. Krishna's cousin and also a very great devotee of the Lord. So he had a family relationship with Krishna. As well as a relationship, a devotional relationship as a bhakta. And so when Uddhava heard that Krishna was desirous to go back to his eternal abode, he was feeling very sad. He wanted to return with Krishna. He was begging Krishna to please take him with him back to his eternal abode. He didn't want to be here without him. Which is also a symptom of devotee, feeling separation from the Lord. And so when he expressed this desire to Krishna, Krishna advised him in different ways. And the first thing he advised him was to take sannyas. And sannyas is? What is sannyas? Renounce sort of life, or completely renouncing one's connection to this material world. I mean, sannyas is also, it's a order in the varnashram system, yes, but it's also an attitude that we take about the life and the world around us. An attitude of renunciation, non-attachment to the temporary, impermanent things of this material world. And so Krishna advised Uddhava in the sixth chapter that one should take sannyas. Now, what would be your response if someone told you to take sannyas? Sixth chapter. We're covering the overview of the sixth and the seventh chapter up to this point. Okay? So what would be your, Ankush, what would be your advice? Someone told you to take sannyas. Huh? You'd go for it. Okay, mark it down. So that's a good point. The sannyas obviously can't be taken immediately, and that's kind of how Uddhava responded. You know, Uddhava's response was, okay, all right, I can understand that that's important, but it's difficult. And he explained how it's difficult to renounce this world. It's not an easy thing. And so what he said was, it's difficult, so therefore you've given this instruction, so I would like to ask you how. How does one renounce this world? How does one come to the stage of sannyas? Obviously, it's not something that can be done prematurely because we all have experience ourselves in our practice of devotional service. We try to become a little bit more renounced in rising earlier, or eating less, or doing more service, or whatever. And you know, it's temporary. We can do it, but then we can't maintain it. So, Krishna's talking about maintaining this attitude of renunciation. So, Uddhava was asking, okay, how? Where can we get instruction on how to do this? And Krishna's response is interesting because he says that the jiva soul is his own guru. The jiva soul is his own guru. He says like this, and that's generally not what we hear. I mean, generally we hear tadvidhi pranipatena pariprasnava sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam gyaninastadvadarshanam, that if you want to know the truth and you want to get out of this world, then what do you have to do? You have to approach a guru. Right? You have to approach a guru. It's a tatvadarshi, someone who knows the truth. But Krishna surprisingly tells Uddhava that the jiva soul is his own guru. And so, to elaborate on this, Krishna tells Uddhava a story. He tells him a story of Maharaj Yudhisthira and this Avadhuta Brahman. And that's the context in which the verse that we're studying here comes today. And I just want to read to you the translations where this discussion starts. It starts in text number 24. We're doing 28 today. The translation is, in this regard, in regard to how one becomes renounced and that the jiva is his own guru, in this regard, sages cite a historical narration concerning the conversation between the greatly powerful King Yadu and an avadhuta. An avadhuta means what? Avadhuta? Huh? Madman? Okay. Right. Right, appearing like a madman. The Vedic culture or society is a varnashram society, and so there are different orders of life and everything's structured that way, but not everyone fits nicely into those little slots. You know, and so an avadhuta is one who doesn't fit into those slots, but not because he's a madman. He may appear like a madman, but because he's in he's perfected his life, actually, and developed his relationship with Krishna, and therefore no longer has any duties or responsibilities in ordinary society. What is the another definition of sannyas, say maybe in Western terms, Prabhupada is given? One is civilly dead. You know, he's civilly dead. He has no civil responsibilities. And so, an avaduta, he's one who's achieved this stage of sannyas, the sannyas life that we're talking about here, that Krishna advises Uddhava. So, in the purport to this first text, it's interesting. Lord Krishna will narrate this story to show Uddhava how rational intelligence can be utilized in bhakti yoga to acquire Vedic knowledge, and ultimately an intelligent person will come to the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So I read that because it makes the point about this idea of rational intelligence. Lord Krishna will narrate this story to show Uddhava how rational intelligence can be utilized in bhakti yoga to acquire Vedic knowledge, and how ultimately an intelligent person will come to the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so this idea of the jiva being his own guru, it's based on this use of rational intelligence, how we can use our intelligence to free ourselves, to become detached from this material world and all the duties and responsibilities and distractions and everything that comes with it. So that's the purpose of the story that Krishna is telling Uddhava. And so he says, Maharaj Yadu once observed a certain Brahmana Avaduta who appeared to be quite young and learned, wandering about fearlessly. Being himself most learned in spiritual science, the king took the opportunity to inquire from him as follows. Sri Yadu said, O Brahmana, I see that you are not engaged in any practical religious activity, and yet you have acquired a most expert understanding of all things and all people within this world. Kindly tell me, sir, how did you acquire this extraordinary intelligence, and why are you traveling freely throughout the world, behaving as if you were a child? Generally, human beings work hard to cultivate religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and also knowledge of the soul. And their usual motive is to increase the duration of their lives, acquire fame, and enjoy material opulence. You, however, although capable, learned, expert, handsome, and most eloquent, are not engaged in doing anything, nor do you desire anything. Rather, you appear stupefied and maddened, as if you were a ghostly creature. So this is the introductory description of the conversation that will follow between the king and the Avaduta Brahmana. And there, in that discussion, we will get instruction on how this Brahman had 24 gurus. 24 gurus. Now, I think you'll probably cover those in later classes, so we won't be talking about that today. But these 24 gurus represent how he utilized his rational intelligence, reason, to become detached from this world and attached to Krishna. Because we just don't want to become detached from this world. We want to become attached to Krishna. And actually, that's the process given to us by the acharyas, that we don't necessarily need to cultivate renunciation or detachment, but rather we cultivate attachment to Krishna, and detachment automatically follows from that. But it does start with approaching transcendental subject matter in the form of a person or the devotees of the Lord. And so that's the subject matter of this text number 28 in the purport, talking about how the common man perceives a devotee, perceives us, all of us. We're all devotees. The common men perceive us. And so how do they perceive us, and how does that help or hurt them on their path of spiritual understanding? That's the question for today. How to approach transcendental knowledge with our material senses. Does anybody want to say what their first impression was when they saw the devotees for the first time? Yes? Okay. The nicest people in the world who weren't looking to get something for you, they were just giving. Okay, that's good. Anybody else? Yes, Garrison. Whatever the person, the devotee. Oh, okay. Okay. Well, the same. Otherworldly. Uh-huh. Because of what? Okay, unworldly because of the shaved head and the dhoti. Okay. Right. Anybody have any kind of a negative response to that? Couldn't categorize them. Okay, all right. Certain ways in which the world, your worldview was structured, just this person didn't fit into it. Okay. Gauranga. He's a ghost. Any of the ladies want to share? Yes. Okay. Well, that's very good. Yes, Ankush. So there's some appreciation there. That's good. Call the country rule? Oh, okay. The fact that they would take it out into the public like that. Gopal? Ah, I see. Okay, well, that's not so. The first time I saw devotee. Do you know who that was by any chance? The first time I saw a devotee was on the campus of a university. I think I was a student at that time. I was a student there. And I thought, let me cross onto the other side of the street so I don't have to interact with this person. I didn't want to. It was too strange for me. It was just too, you know. I wasn't looking necessarily for spiritual life at that time. And so it just appeared a little bit strange for me. But all these, of course, you all are wonderful devotees, and so your experiences were sort of transcendental or religious when you first saw a devotee. But a lot of people, as is described in this verse in the purport here today, sometimes when they see a devotee, they think in terms of their material condition in life. And they don't appreciate it. You know, like they say here in the purport, it says, why don't you get a job? When people see the devotees, they think that, oh, these people are just not productive members of society. You know, they're trying to be different. And that difference is non-consequential in terms of what we should be doing in our life. Is that, I think that that's an impression that those who aren't devotionally inclined may have about devotees. As I said, I thought this person was like sickly looking, you know, very ghostly in appearance. But these are obviously misconceptions. And so when we ourselves go about representing Krishna consciousness, how do you think people perceive us, each one of us individually? When you go out in society and people come to be find that you're a devotee, how would you want them to respond? I mean, maybe how we want them to respond may not be how we are presenting ourselves. And so I'd like you to think about that a little bit. I mean, how do you think you would want somebody to respond to you as you go out in society and meet the general population? Anybody follow the same thing? Mm-hmm. And do you feel that that is best accomplished in representing yourself as the same way when you met a devotee for the first time? In other words, you said you met a devotee with the shaved head and the dhoti and coming and things like that, and that's something that really struck you as being attractive. And,
I would like to do like that.
Okay. Anybody else have any? Yes, Mudajita.
A bit different, but relate someone they could relate to.
Okay.
And sometimes I feel, for me anyway, more comfortable not always being in devotee dress, because I think sometimes.
Can you repeat that last?
I think for me, sometimes I feel more comfortable not my first interaction with someone not being in devotee dress, because maybe for the average person that would be more of a turn off than a turn on. And if they got to know you and then found out your full involvement in a religious, then they might have more of a, in other words, they already formed the impression of you, mm-hmm. and then they could handle more, you know.
Right. Okay, that's interesting. Especially when we're giving Krishna consciousness in a culture that the dress, the appearance is foreign. I remember hearing stories about devotees who are traveling Sankirtan in the Midwest, Brahmachari traveling parties, and they'd be in some small town and they'd be doing their morning program, go out to chant japa or something, and have the shaved head and the sikha, and people thought, oh, this person escaped from a sane asylum or something like that, and they would like try to call the police and round them up. Or one time when we were in a library party, we were in Arkansas, and stopped to get gas. I was with Mahabodhi. We stopped to get gas, and we had our shaved heads and everything. And we asked the person where the university was at the gas station, you know, how to get to the university. So he gave us, because we were going there the next day to distribute books on the college campus to the professors with our wigs and suits and everything like that. And so this person, he saw us sitting in the van and asking where the university was, and he thought, oh, these people must be involved in drugs or something like that. Small Arkansas town. So we checked into a motel, and a little while later, someone knocked on the door, and it was the police. You know, they'd come to check us out because we had California license plates on our van, and we were asking about the university, and we looked strange. And so he thought they must be selling drugs, so they sent the police to us, and the police checked us out and everything like that. So people have misconceptions, I think that whatever way we present ourselves to society, I think dhoti kurta shaved head is fine, sari is fine, otherwise is fine. But we need to be aware of how people are responding to us and keep that in mind, because it will affect how they can become Krishna conscious or they can't become Krishna conscious. And we'll discuss that a little bit. But Damodar, you want to say something? Sounds.
All right, well, when my dad was on the Radha Damodar traveling bus party with Vishnu Jan Maharaj, they stopped in one gas station and they had to take a shower with a hose, so they were out there with their copens and they were just spraying themselves off. And the police came, and they said they got a report of aliens.
Of aliens. Okay, aliens. Now, is that what we want to? Does that help us or hurt us when we're trying to give Krishna consciousness to people? Again, I think it's not just as easy as saying devotional dress versus non-devotional dress, but I think it involves using our intelligence a little bit, you know, and how people may perceive us. People may perceive us in ways in which that we aren't aware that they're perceiving us, and that may have an effect on them in terms of their ability to accept Krishna consciousness or not. And so I think it's something that devotees should be aware of. I mean, even the joke about devotees we have among ourselves, that devotees have different colored socks and things like that, and they go on Harinam and things. So I think we need to be aware, because most people, when they come to Krishna consciousness, they use their rational intelligence. Just like Maharaj Yadu here, he's saying to this Avadhuta Brahman, you appear a certain way. You don't appear like a devotee normally appears. I mean, you're handsome, you appear very capable, you're eloquent, you know. How is it that you're not using these things for material advancement, for your material advancement? Sometimes people are surprised. Oh, you have, you know, so many PhD and things like that as part of your movement, you know. They're thinking, why are they surprised when they hear that? They're thinking that because, well, if someone had a PhD, why would they become a devotee? You know, what benefit would it get them to have that? But again, these are all misconceptions, and we need to be aware of how we appear to society. And how that will help them take the Krishna consciousness. That they won't scream at us, why don't you get a job? But they'll understand the job that we are doing. Now, there are several verses from our scriptures which explain this. So I just want to read them to you to emphasize this point, and then go over some of the problems that can happen when people do let these material conceptions block them from getting Krishna consciousness. The Padma Purana has a couple of nice verses in this regard. The first is, it's a long verse, but I'll just read the first part of it. The person who considers the deity of the Supreme Lord to be dead matter made out of stone, wood, or metal, or the spiritual master who is an eternal associate of the Supreme Lord, be it to be an ordinary man, who is prone to die, or the Vaishnava to be coming from some caste, such a person is possessed of a hellish mentality. And so, first thing to know about devotees of the Lord is that they will be from all different backgrounds in life, all different races, all different ethnic backgrounds, all different areas of the world. There's a common perception, at least it was common during the 60s and Srila Prabhupada, 60s and 70s, and Srila Prabhupada spoke about it, that if you're going to be a guru or someone that has spiritual knowledge from India, that you had to have a big, big what? Yeah, you had a big, big, big beard. If you came with a big, big beard, you know, you were spiritual somehow or another. You know? And people, you know, took you as such. Again, this is a material conception of, you know, what a guru should look like. But it also takes a more harsh tone when people criticize, say people from India, they criticize, oh, that the Westerners can't become Vaishnavas or aren't genuine Vaishnavas somehow or another. That to be a Vaishnava, a devotee of Krishna, the real devotee of Krishna, you have to be either born in a Brahmana family or at least from India. These are very harmful and incorrect conceptions, and the Shastra speaks against these things. Another verse from Padma Purana is, even if a Brahmin is very learned in Vedic scriptures and knows the six occupational duties of a Brahmana, he cannot become a guru or spiritual master unless he is a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. However, if one is born in a family of dog eaters, but as a pure devotee of the Lord, he can become a spiritual master. The important point is to be a devotee of the Lord, not how you look or what your family background is. We should remember these things. We might think they're a little far away from us, you know, but I think if we delve into our own consciousness a little bit, sometimes we can see that how we may have some prejudices in these regards or think that or make distinctions between devotees based on material conceptions of life. Now, this last verse I want to read is from the Nectar of Instruction, Upadeshamrita by Srila Rupa Goswami. It's interesting in that it parallels the verse we're studying today, because in this verse, Maharaj Yadu, he's struck by this person being capable, learned, expert, handsome, and eloquent in his speech. And Rupa Goswami advises us of how we might perceive someone that's just the opposite. He says, being situated in his original Krishna conscious position, a pure devotee does not identify with the body. Such a devotee should not be seen from a materialistic point of view. Indeed, one should overlook a devotee's having a body born in a low family with a bad complexion, a deformed body, or a diseased or infirmed body. According to ordinary vision, such imperfections may seem prominent in the body of a pure devotee, but despite such seeming defects, the body of a pure devotee cannot be polluted. It is exactly like the water of the Ganges, which sometimes during the rainy season is full of bubbles, foam, and mud. The Ganges water does not become polluted. Those who are advanced in spiritual understanding will bathe in the Ganges without considering the condition of the water. So, how someone appears, deformed, with a bad complexion, all the things that you may think drive one to become a devotee. Oh, this person could never make it in society. They could never have a girlfriend or boyfriend. They're ugly, you know, they don't have intelligence, all these things. No wonder you became a devotee. If we think like that, that's also very harmful for our spiritual life, because a devotee doesn't identify with the body, and we shouldn't consider their material body when trying to get transcendental knowledge. I think that there's a very interesting, sad in some ways, but transcendentally instructive in another way, incident in our own society with His Holiness Jayapataka Swami. Now, Holiness Jayapataka Swami had a stroke, very serious stroke, about over 2 years ago now, I think. And since that time, there's some deformity in his face because, you know, a stroke happens in your body on one side or the other, sort of goes limp. To look at him, especially those of us that knew him before, and to see him now, you know, you might think that, well, he's less desirable to take Krishna consciousness from or something like that, or it's harder because of the deformity that's there in his face. But actually, if you talk with him, you see that although that is there, he's exactly the same person as he was before. It's amazing, you know, medically it's a miracle that he survived, and even that he functions in the exact same way he did before without any defect. And so if we took just a material view of him, we might think, oh, well, you know, we might not be ready to embrace him so much. But if you listen to him, you hear him, you interact with him, he's the same person. When I was, and I saw him in Bombay a few months ago, I went up to him and I was talking to him and I said, Maharaj, I heard you just did a big initiation in Bangladesh. You initiated 1,500 people or something like that. Something like that. And he said to me, he said, shh. In other words, he was joking about it, and he, in a way that's just, it was just him, you know, the same person was there, you know, and it's quite amazing, although he was doing it with, you know, the deformity that's there in his face now. And so if we think that the material body is the important thing when we try to interact with Vaishnavas, we will be greatly mistaken. And we'll be unfortunate in two ways. There are two ways that hurt us when we get into this type of material conceptions about the body of a Vaishnava. Anybody want to guess what one of the two is, Angus? Okay. Yeah, okay. Hold it then, yes. We can commit offenses, right. That's the second one. What's the question is that there are two things that result from taking a material view of Vaishnavas. And he said the second one, which is we commit offenses, and the first one is? Yes, think that they're under the control of material energy, not be controlled by Krishna, and therefore, what? We can't take association, we can't take knowledge from them. We think, oh, this person is under the control of the material energy, and therefore, I can't take spiritual knowledge from them. If we think like that, we miss a great opportunity. We miss a very great opportunity because that is how we actually get transcendental knowledge. How do we get transcendental knowledge in this world? We get it from the Vaishnavas, from hearing from them, from associating with them. That's how we get it. There's actually no other way to get it. This transcendental knowledge. Is even the Bhagavatam we read the Srimad Bhagavatam or Srila Prabhupada's books, we're associating with Srila Prabhupada. And therefore, we're getting that transcendental knowledge. Therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that he reasons ill who say that Vaishnavas die when thou art living and sound. A Vaishnava dies to live and while living spreads the holy name around. And so Prabhupada's books are there. It's not Prabhupada is dead and gone. We're associating with Prabhupada. We're getting through. So if we have the material conception of Prabhupada that his body died and therefore we can't associate with him, then we're cheating ourselves because we can't get the instruction from Prabhupada. We think, oh, I can't associate with Prabhupada and we won't get his instruction. So even death doesn't prevent that type of instruction from flowing to us. So if we think in terms of Vaishnava, in terms of his material body, then we cheat ourselves because we missed a chance for knowledge. Now, all of you in the beginning were saying how you met devotees, and you took advantage. You took advantage. You were saying that Mataji on the end there were saying how she took advantage. She went there, and the people were nice, and therefore you took advantage of it. You reciprocated, you know, with them. But if you're thinking in terms of materially about them, you might have missed that opportunity. So that's one thing. And then the other is offenses. Now, when we commit offenses, generally speaking, in a material condition of life, when anyone is different than us, we tend to fall into a position where we could commit offenses. This material world is full of duality. I was just speaking with some devotees the other night, and I was explaining how in all my travels around the world, it's funny how there's always people at odds with one another, even different kind of odds. I was explaining, well, here in America, you know, there's problem black and white. At least there used to be problem black and white. But you go to other countries where essentially both people are of the same color, but they have something else that they fight about. Like in Northern Ireland, for instance, they're fighting about Catholic and Protestant, you know, so they're not fighting out black and white there. They're fighting about Catholic and Protestant. In India, it's a Hindu-Muslim. They're fighting. The same people, same bodily features, all the things, but it's Hindu-Muslim difference. Everywhere in the world, we find a way materially to differ with someone else. That causes us to make offenses. When we make offenses, when we think in terms of materially of a Vaishnava, then we're bound to fall into making offenses. And offenses are the one thing that can prevent us from getting Krishna consciousness. They're the one thing that can prevent us from getting Krishna consciousness. If we commit offenses to Vaishnavas, then at a very fundamental basis, we are preventing ourselves from being able to get Krishna consciousness. Can anybody say why that is? Why offenses are so destructive? Anybody? It hurts Krishna because it loves all those. Yes. I think it definitely has something to do with feelings and the sentiments that we have, which are very much a part of Krishna consciousness. Interesting. Yeah. Let's hope so. Hope he's not disagreeing. But offenses hurt the sensitivities of Krishna. His devotees are very dear to him. And when he sees them criticized, it hurts him, and he's not inclined. Ultimately, our ability to be Krishna conscious depends upon Krishna's mercy. And he's not inclined to give his mercy to those that hurt his devotees or hurt him. Because he's a person. We shouldn't think that he's not a person. And so offenses arise when we let these material conceptions dominate our consciousness and the interaction with devotees. And so in a real sense, being Krishna conscious is a way in which the whole world can benefit, even materially, what to speak of spiritually. How wonderful a world it would be if we didn't have material differences coming up between us and causing enmity and strife in our relationships. That in itself would almost make this world like the spiritual world. What to speak of the fact that if we understand the nature of a Vaishnava and take instruction from them, we can be purified and ultimately go back home, back to Godhead. So, are there any questions? How do we stop offending? Well, I think you know that. We all have some sense of that. When we are, again, this section is about rational use of the intelligence. So you can use your intelligence to understand when you are thinking materially about somebody and not, you know, seeing them as a Vaishnava, as a spirit soul first. We can understand that about our behavior and our motivation in dealing with people. And so that can be your guide, and it should be your guide.